Welcome to the Franchise Your Freedom podcast. Today I'm here talking with Richard Cody, a successful Orange Theory Fitness franchisee, to hear his story and understand a little bit about his journey as a franchisee that started, built multiple locations, and then successfully exited that business development. Welcome to the show, Cody.
Thank you, Dave, and glad to be here.
So tell me a little bit about your background and your story that kind of led up to your Orange Theory investment.
Well, my background has always been in business, and I started out with a professional sales background, and then quickly recognized that I had entrepreneurial aspirations. So my first entrepreneurial venture, I actually bought into a company that I worked for. And then as a part of that acquisition, the founders agreed to retire. And then at some point we had a built-in full acquisition based on performance. So that was a nice way for me, and a seamless way for me to transition into entrepreneurship and take over a company. It was a turnaround opportunity. We had a fantastic success story there. And then ultimately I sold my position prior to the full the completion of the full acquisition. So that was my first entrepreneurial venture. And then I did a number of things beyond that. I did some small things. I did a startup in 2007 that was a new product. It was a new brand. And so created that from the ground up, built a company. We didn't complete the final year because I sold that company to a private equity in Florida. So in the process, that if we had completed the year and not been interrupted by a highly intrusive due diligence process, we would have closed somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 million revenue. So that was fun. And then, of course, stayed on with the buyer for, I don't recall, a little while until they fired me. And then in the process was looking for some other things to do. And like I said, I did some things in between. I'm trying to hit the kind of the high notes. My wife actually talked to you initially because I was one of my attorneys in that business I sold to the private equity. He had asked me to help him build out his pizza business in Southern California to a franchise model. And so guess who I sought out? That would be you. Do you recall that?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. I had a blast working with you guys.
So that was my first exposure to the franchise business model, other than just sort of generally being aware that there are franchise businesses. Had no interest whatsoever in that business model, however, with the exception of wanting to possibly develop this friend / attorney of mine's business. And so you started the conversation about the franchise business and would I be interested in it? And you showed us a couple of things, and we there were a few things that were interesting. And along the way, I think you had kind of passively mentioned a brand as a potential successful up and comer, and described to me, you'll more eloquently describe, but describe to me what factors caused you to think that was a good example of a franchise business, as you were just generally describing franchise businesses to me. It wasn't long thereafter that my wife, Melissa, started investigating businesses herself, and she ran across Orange Theory, the brand. Again, in the meantime, I was still working for the buyer of my previous company, and just kind of I knew that I was going to be let go at some point. It was just a matter of when, and I was getting the feeling I was nearing the end. So was interested in what am I going to do next. My wife, Melissa, I mentioned, she had worked in corporate America most of her professional career. She worked for GE Healthcare. She sold capital equipment for women's health, x-ray, mammogram, bone density, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And got thoroughly burned out by that mega corporation environment, actually made her sick. So I told her just to leave. And so while she was kind of in her, I'll call it recovery period, she got interested. She also had entrepreneurial aspirations. Her family were entrepreneurs. And so she put this in front of me and suggested I look at it. I was highly resistant. Still not kind of bought into the franchise thing.
Yeah. So Cody, tell me about that. You're a very successful entrepreneur and you've kind of done your own thing. You learned how to buy into a company to kind of transition from that corporate America into business ownership, and then successfully built other businesses. So big question is, why franchising? And I think one of the reason I ask this is one of the misnomers out there is that franchising is just for people that want to buy a job, right? And me personally, as the franchise expert and consultant, I hate that idea that we're buying a job because we can't go get a job. And I like to share the idea that franchising is about building a business or a business asset that you can sell. So what were the things that you liked about franchising that have you gravitate towards franchising? And what were some of your, misconceptions or things that held you back from even wanting to pursue the Orange Theory idea?
Yeah, David, that is a great question. And there's loaded a lot in that question. And I'll see if I can unpack it maybe one at a time. But I think the thing that I came to appreciate and value most about the franchise business model was what I was scared most about or most apprehensive about that business model. I thought that I was so smart that there's no way I was going to allow some big brother to dictate to me how I was going to run my business, what my business was going to look like, and so on and so on and so forth. So those things that scared me. Number one, I didn't like the idea that I was going to surrender what I expected to be a very high level of control over to some third party. I also had this expectation, or I had this fear in terms of an exit, because I always believe that it's much like a house. You always understand where the exit is when you go in the front door. And I feel the same way about a business. And so for me, I had questions and probably some misunderstandings about what that exit could look like. I didn't think that I would be able to build a sellable business in the traditional sense. So those were kind of two of the primary concerns I had. And so, as I mentioned, full circle, ultimately, those became, I think, two of the most valuable aspects, at least of the franchise brand that we worked with, was number one, I came to appreciate that it was such a well-developed brand, not perfect and still a work in progress, because we got in relatively early. Our first location was store number, I can't believe I can't think of that off the top of my head now. It was 485. And again, there's, I think, over 1,500 locations now. So relatively early, but far enough in where they had developed really the core operations, the core brand statements, all of those things were very, very kind of well developed. So number one, so then what I actually came to very quickly appreciate the fact that there was so much that I did not have to spend time and energy on. The whole architectural environmental package was fully developed, had to do it that way. So I didn't have to do that. Like at one point I thought I don't get to do that. And at the point where I really understood the brand and had completed all the due diligence, then that flipped on me. And I had the inverse perspective in that I didn't have to do that, but there was yet enough flexibility that I could make a space work and so on and so forth. I happened to previously own, as you know, an architectural design and retail development company. So I did that for a living for many years. But I was able to let that go and leverage what skills and experience I did have into building a beautiful facility. So then it also came to the processes. We were able to really piggyback on well-developed processes, yet there was enough room for development that we actually developed processes that corporate now uses even today. And then in terms of our exit strategy, we were able to develop a sellable business. And as you know, we actually completed our sale at the very last day of 2021 at multiples that I had no idea we would be able to experience, especially in a service business like fitness post-COVID in a state that was one of the least friendly states to fitness as it relates to COVID. So arguably the least. So to be able to exit at the time that we did with the financial outcome that we did really was, I think, I would have been happy with our exit had I known that would be the exit the day that we started the business. Pre-COVID, there was a material amount more that was left on the table as a result of having experienced COVID with that business.
So you bring up a good point. COVID and COVID in the state of Washington, which was just not business friendly. That was very COVID centric. What advice would you give to listeners that are thinking about starting a business, owning a business? Maybe they're thinking about wanting to get into the fitness business, but they're afraid of a pandemic, of the government coming in and shutting things down. You know, that because the pandemic kind of demonstrated that can happen, people kind of hold on to that residual negativity, right? So you lived through it and exited successfully. What would you say to people that are thinking about stepping out of that corporate America safety net and starting something on their own today in a post-COVID world?
Yeah, that's also a good question, David. I'll go back to the question that you asked a minute ago that I didn't answer, which had to do with buying yourself a job. And I think that especially pertains to those folks that are in corporate America, and they probably have decent jobs, decent incomes, but they're looking for something beyond that. And usually that's related to some level of control over their time. And I think your question you just asked is somewhat related in that to make that transition, regardless of the times we live in, there's a certain amount of risk tolerance that an individual has to have, period. And there are things that you can't know. We never in my while, I can remember distinctly standing in one of our studios and a member asked me, and this was in mid-March, asked me, do you think they're going to close you down? And I laughed at him and I said, are you out of your mind? They can't close our businesses. What are you, crazy? and my point is that there's always something. There's the economy. There's this unforeseen pandemic. There's something that happens in a particular city or region that causes some kind of a shift. So there's always something. So the first level of making that leap is just accepting that there's going to be risk, and then trying to somehow figure out how much risk can I and my family tolerate to do this. And that's just, you have to do that in any circumstances. So to me, what the benefit of making a decision to do that at a time like this, a post-COVID time, is because it's now history. We now have the experience. We now understand what that was. And so I think, especially as it relates to a franchise business, it's even more important to do really, really honest due diligence, because hopefully that brand has also already lived through soldiering their brand through the COVID experience. So that, do you understand what I'm saying? So they basically have solved that problem for you as a new franchisee. And yeah. So it's really about doing due diligence and trying to cross-validate how they have gone through the process and what it looks like for the brand going forward. So I don't know, maybe I'm making it a bit of a cop out of an answer, but I would really lean on the franchisor to understand how have they adjusted their business specifically in a post-COVID kind of environment. But again, understand there are so many more things that you don't know. You just have to have some level of tolerance for risk, or don't do that.
Yeah, I think to kind of reflect back, what I'm hearing is, if you're going to step out of a corporate job into something that you own and control, you really need to identify and reflect on what is the risk tolerance that you actually have, and what does that mean? And then as it relates to things that are outside of your control that would then, you know, increase your the challenges and or your emotional reaction to that, like a COVID pandemic event, your role as a franchisee is to lean on the franchisor and their experience. That's the whole reason that you're deciding to do a franchise versus starting a business from scratch on your own, right? At least you've got the franchisor and their experience, but also maybe the peer group, your other franchisees across the country that you can lean on as well. Tell me a little bit about your experience with your co-franchisees. You know, there's typically an annual conference, and so you get to know them. Sometimes you just know your other franchisees across the country, know who they are, and sometimes they become really close friends and trusted colleagues and advisors almost. Did you have that experience? What was your experience interacting with other franchisees, and was it positive or negative?
Yeah, it was very positive for us. I would say that if you're a serious potential franchisee, if you're going to be in. What I saw was kind of both. Mostly was positive. I had co-franchisees that we developed really, really close relationships, like you mentioned, both personal and professional. So we very much leaned on each other in terms of working through some of the nuances of the business, and we shared ideas. So my recommendation is, if you're in, be in. Because there were those that were always sort of the black sheep, and they were negative, and they were quick to point out everything that was wrong with the brand or everything that was wrong with the marketing. And there were things that weren't great, but as a whole, it was very good. And so I just always felt like my wife was very good at developing relationships and sharing ideas and strategies and operational nuances and things like that. So focus on those people, develop those relationships, because there will be some And you'll notice a correlation, by the way, between their performance and their attitude. There's no question in my mind about that. So we still have, in fact, interestingly enough, one the buyers of our business, one of them was our AR for a few years, and we developed a really close relationship. And when he went on to corporate and he was traveling internationally and so forth, he was no longer our AR. That was a relationship that we had developed. And then his partner was ultimately one of our members, one of our customers, and they got together. I was facilitated a meeting of the two, and ultimately they're the ones that bought our business. So I think regardless of it, if it's a franchise business or not, you always want to develop those relationships because they can bear fruit in the future. If not the way that it did for us, certainly on a day-to-day performance level. And then your mention of the convention, again, I'll say it, if you're in, you're in. Go to the conventions, participate in this stuff, meet the people. I mean, they really are the network that you develop during the course, especially of the maturation of your own business, that's going to be invaluable. It's going to pay dividends. There's no question in my mind.
So, Cody, I want you to go back. You really nailed it with something that you said, that it was something around the difference between the top performers and the less than top performers has everything to do with attitude. And one of the things that I hear day in and day out as a franchise consultant is, I want a franchise with a good brand, or I have to have an awesome location, right? Because you don't understand, my location is special and different. It has to do with the, you know, I like to talk a lot about systems, but your comment was attitude, and I couldn't agree with you more. What are some of the things that you've noticed that you saw in your wife, Melissa, who's a total rock star, that drove that high performance, but also in other franchisees that were sort of in the upper echelon of a brand that has 1,500 locations?
Yeah, I think she's a great example, I think, to point out for that question, because she was committed to process and systems. And maybe that has something to do with her nature, but she was not only committed to it, but she was disciplined about it. So number one, she believed in it. She was disciplined about it. And everybody that was, everybody involved in our business knew that. And so she was all about executing, on the processes that have been developed and that we had enhanced. And so it was, and her attitude about it was, she, in other words, there were things, I'm struggling with this a little bit, because there were things, and I would call them, characterize them as mostly minor, that we thought there were better ways to do it. But our staff never knew that. Those were always conversations that were isolated to us. And we also had a responsive franchisor. And she would first demonstrate them. She was not a complainer, so she wouldn't complain about what was there. She would adjust, and then she would demonstrate that it was successful. And then we would present it to corporate, and then they, in most cases, accepted them in their processes that they use today. But part of that comes in the due diligence process. And I know I've said that a couple of times. I'm saying due diligence from the perspective of the potential franchisee and taking that really, really seriously and doing everything you can do. You can't know everything, but you can know a lot. And I pivoted a little bit on you, and I'm not sure if I've adequately answered the previous question, so I apologize for the pivot, but.
No, I think it's good. I think what you're saying is you have to ask good questions, to identify what are those things that are going to cause you to have a bad attitude or a good attitude about the franchise system and executing against that system, which is what drove, you know, the high level of success for you and Melissa. One question that I have, I get a lot in terms of partnership, right? So I'll have two scenarios that are pretty common. I have a coworker and we want to be partners, and I've worked with this person for 10 years. And so being a business partner is a good idea. The one thing I always point out in that scenario, whether I'm talking to a husband or wife or male or female, doesn't matter. I want them to recognize that their spouse is part of the partnership regardless. So we're not talking about two people, we're talking about four people. And differently, if I'm talking to, let's say, a female candidate, I want to ask her, where's her husband in this whole idea of starting a business, right? So pointing out that you are in a partnership anyway, do you recognize that? And then how do we think about what a successful partnership looks like? That's what I would like you to share with our listeners, is what does a successful partnership look like? In our previous conversation, you really talked about what a great partnership that was, keeping the business and you know, the personal relationship sort of separate, but that's always hard to do. Can you speak to what that business relationship looks like with your spouse?
Yeah, that is a great one. And in full transparency, I didn't share with you one of my other major apprehensions early on when I studied franchises. I didn't want to be in business with my wife. So that was also part of the challenge. And I would say that previously, and probably still generally, I've always said that if you want to preserve good friendships, make sure you don't go in business with them. And that probably it, right? Could be said about marriages too. Well, that being said, the real key to the success of our personal relationship, our business relationship, and those two things, the real key to that, because they're so closely intertwined when you do this, and it could be, like you said, it could be a spouse, it could be a brother, a sister combination, it could be friends, like you said, coworkers, could be anything, but it still applies. And the key is to be real honest about what level of buy-in that each of you have individually, because you have to have the same level of buy-in. And I could drill down in that and talk about what that means, but it's just across the board. You're both committed to the same goal. So you've articulated what your goals are going in. You've articulated where the challenges are. You're both on the same page when you're trying to understand that. You've done the due diligence together, so you both understand. You've both talked to the other franchisees about the potential opportunity. You've both talked to the broker, if there's a broker, or some other sort of middleman in between. So that you both understand that going in. And then once you've decided that something you're going to do, it comes down to having a very, very clear and committed understanding of what your roles and responsibilities are in the business, and then where those cross over, where you're sharing responsibilities. So, and that was one of the things that we were able to do successfully, is that Melissa had very specific areas of responsibility that I would offer input, feedback otherwise, but I rarely interacted with staff in her areas of responsibility, so as to not confuse messaging, to have, because that's one of the classic problems in any business, much less husband, wife, brother, sister, brother, whatever it is.
Yes.
That you're stepping on each, you're sending mixed messages to the staff. And that's, it's not fair to them. So, and likewise, there were there were major areas of responsibilities that I was, that I handled, that she offered feedback, asked questions. But when it came down to it, that was my area of responsibility. And then where there was clear crossover, we just talked about it and we fought about it and argued about it. And we came to a decision. We moved forward on the decision and then it was on to the next thing. So, I think that that was really, if I were to boil it down, it was understanding each other's areas of responsibility and then respecting and being committed to those.
Yeah, that's such
a discipline about it.
Yeah, that one thing I like that I'm hearing from you, Cody, in multiple parts of the conversation, it's attitude. You use the word discipline multiple times. Focus on the system and the process and have discipline. Focus on your lane as a partner. This is her lane. This is your lane. And then have discipline to stay in your lane. Those are the things that really separate the highly successful from the not so successful, which is why I wanted to have you on the show and have this conversation, because you, just in talking with you the other day, you did so many things well and so many things right that drove that remarkable exit and strong EBITDA and all of those things. So not super surprising, you were a successful entrepreneur before. But so many great lessons to be shared in this conversation. So I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your experience, because I believe that's where the magic is talking to people who've actually done it and gaining from your experience. So thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. I have an appreciation for your, especially your candidates, because, you know, we were there. We asked all the same things. We had all the same apprehensions. We had all the same current concerns. We had all the same hope. We had all the same ambition. And so we can really appreciate that. I was blessed to have a phenomenal partner that I truthfully don't think I could have experienced this level of success without her, regardless of whether she was my wife or not. I really don't believe that this kind of level of success could have been achieved without her. So that needs to be said.
That's fantastic. I love it when husbands talk so highly of their spouse. I think that's always an attractive attribute. And having met Melissa, she deserves all of the accolades that you're giving her for sure. So thank you for being on the show, Cody. Lots of nuggets of great nuggets of information here. I appreciate your time and I look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Bye-bye.